All right, excellent. Thanks.
Okay,
take it away,
thanks.
Jane.
Hi, my name is Jane Ungback, and I am an assistant professor at the University of Connecticut Health Center, the School of Medicine, actually. I'm not a social worker. I'm here today to report about a project that I've been engaged in for the past, I guess we're on year four now. I am a health services researcher. I specialize in the areas of substance abuse prevention and treatment services. And most frequently, I, over the past 20 years or so, partner with state agencies in Connecticut. Most particularly the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services and the Department of Children and Families. What I'm going to be reporting on today is actually a collaboration between three state agencies, both Department of Children and Families, DCF, Mental Health and Addiction Services, DMIS, and the Judicial Branch. And it's a program called the Recovery Specialist Voluntary Program. It is a program that targets parents who are substance involved and whom DCF has taken to court to remove the children and begin proceedings for termination of their parental rights. Up here, I just want to acknowledge my colleagues, the collaborators in this project. Melissa Sienna is one of my staff, however, she is placed at the DCF working on substance abuse issues in the Child Welfare Agency. Mary Lou Giovannucci is from the Judicial Branch, and she represents the court in this particular project. Sam Moy is a director or the CEO of Advanced Behavioral Health, which is a behavioral health services management agency. And Karen Orenberger is from DMIS, the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, and Mary Painter is from DCF, the Child Welfare. So I think it's really important to point out that this whole project and this presentation is the result of a collaboration. I have no relationships to disclose. I haven't seen any with any thus far. There have been broad estimates about how it's broadly acknowledged that substance abuse is a major issue in child welfare. And the estimates of cases that are substance involved, I've seen estimates ranging from 11%, which I have to tell you is an outlier, to 80%. And generally, it's accepted that it's probably between 50% and 80% nationally that child welfare cases are substance involved. In Connecticut, using DCF's own data and the reports that the caseworkers flagged cases, we found that 1 in 3 were of OTC cases, order of temporary custody, were substance involved. And this is really a critical issue because parental substance abuse, our own data show, are associated with longer out-of-home placements, less likely of reunification for children. We also have a problem in that Connecticut, as well as many other states, has really a process in place to refer substance involved families into for evaluation and treatment. Unfortunately, the national rate of success in getting them into treatment is about 50%. In Connecticut, only one-third of those who were referred by DCF to DMIS, which is responsible for substance abuse treatment services, actually found their way into substance abuse treatment. When they, even those who did, had delays often of several weeks just gaining access to treatment slots. And there are lots of barriers here for families caught up in the child welfare court and substance abuse treatment systems here. First of all, they completely different cultures. They have different missions and mandates. Their timelines for accomplishing their own goals of those systems are different. For instance, for substance abuse treatment, it's focused only on the adult. There's really no involvement at all with what happens with children. And they are focusing on an adult with a chronic disease that requires, on average, at least 90 days of treatment and then long-term recovery processes with likelihood of recurrence. In the child welfare and court systems, they're under strict timelines. Clock is ticking to make placement decisions for those children, and they have to accomplish really procedural goals in a short period of time. I should say that their success in doing that is not great anyway, but the other thing is there's a lot of lack of communication across the agencies. They work almost independently of each other, and they don't share information in part due to confidentiality issues. Now, I would also state that Connecticut is one of the few states that does not have a family drug court, which was developed specifically to address this kind of problem. So in Connecticut, they had to figure out a way to have an alternative to drug courts. I've talked about the collaboration here, but back in 2008, really recognizing that they were not doing a good job of getting these parents or caregivers into substance abuse treatment, representatives of the three agencies started talking to each other about what they could do, what kind of program they could put together. They decided that they wanted to develop a recovery-oriented system of care for substance-involved OTC families. OTC means these families often having really long histories with child welfare have reached the end of the line, if you will. So they wanted to change both policies and practices and how they work together. They wanted specifically to increase interagency communication, collaboration, and data sharing, and they decided part of that would have to be addressing sort of misunderstandings or lack of knowledge about addictions, child welfare, court processes, child development, trauma, and a variety of other things that were involved with these families. Another specific goal of the program was to increase these parents' access, engagement, and retention in substance abuse treatment. I mentioned that only about a third of the substance involved parents were actually getting into treatment prior to RSVP. No one knows how many actually finished the program. And statewide data would suggest not even half of them would have finished their treatment programs. Wanted to increase access to case management and recovery supports for these adults. And more importantly, we wanted to improve rates and timeliness of child permanency decisions and family reunification. Now, the permanency decisions was the primary goal. What they wanted to do was have a stable situation for the children, preferably back with their own parents, but not necessarily so. And another goal here was to reduce costs associated with these cases. I'm not going to report about that today. We are currently working on doing a cost analysis. A little bit about RSVP. It's a voluntary program for these parents who've had their children removed by an OTC. The parents who are eligible for this program are identified by the court. When they first arrive for a preliminary hearing for the OTC, the DCF has alerted the court that this is a substance-involved case, but the initiative is from the court side. At that point, if the parent and their attorney agree to participate in RSVP, their recovery specialist is introduced to the parent, and their job is to assist that parent in engaging in substance abuse treatment, providing recovery coaching and advocacy, and doing random drug screening. It's usually a 9-month program in 3 stages. It's more intensive, more testing, more meeting with a recovery specialist in the beginning, and then tapering off at the end. The recovery specialists also provide documentation to the court and DCF on the parents' efforts, but it's very limited information. It is only about compliance with the program. This becomes the court-ordered program, and they're reporting in that under that authority. They also participate in joint service planning with treatment providers, DCF, mental health providers, and domestic violence providers, and a broad range of people for joint planning. And as I mentioned earlier, it is administered by ABH. I'm going to go through this quickly. They have had to have their children removed by the court. Issuing the OTC, substance abuse was involved. This was done in 3 pilot sites in Connecticut, Bridgeport, New Britain, and Willimantic. They are all quite different communities in the state. There also has to be a potential for reunification, and the parent has to agree. I'm reporting on the results of the outcome evaluation. There was also a process evaluation. All of that was jointly funded by all 3 agencies. We used data from each of the agencies. We did not collect primary data for this. This is all based on administrative data from each of the agencies. Needless to say, none of these agencies had ever used these data for this sort of purpose before, and it was a task just identifying the data to use and then accessing the data and then determining the quality of the data. And in some instances, it was quite a surprise to the agency representatives that they did not have the information they thought was there. This is the OTCs. We had, in essence, about 3/4 of the eligible OTCs were referred to the program in these pilot sites. Of those, 84%, almost all referred, entered the program. In terms of the characteristics, they were overwhelmingly mothers. And they, for the most part, were young. They were not married. So they frequently lived alone, and so having implications for their access to social support. They were a diverse group of people, but non-whites were overrepresented, and that's pretty typical of this population nationally. Housing, a very significant proportion of them were either homeless or at risk of eviction or in subsidized housing. Only 1 in 5 was employed. They tended to be on general assistance. Income levels were appallingly low. I won't talk about that. Needless to say, also, as we would expect in this population, they had criminal histories for the most part. They also had high rates of domestic violence and trauma and co-occurring mental health problems. These are data from DCF, and it's showing that this is also true nationally, that neglect is the biggest problem from the perspective of child welfare. But look also, this population of adults has really limited or poor coping skills. They have limited social support and insufficient resources by DCF's own ratings. Oh, damn. This is data from DMIS, and it shows that without seeing the numbers, you can see that this is a population that's deeply involved with substance abuse. And even if it's not the primary problem, there's likely to be secondary problems, and these are multiple drug users. The outcomes, 84% of our clients enrolled in substance abuse treatment following their enrollment in the program. This compared to the less than a third before, most of them within less than 2 weeks. 61% had a prior history of substance involvement. Their placements were just distributed across the field. I have about a minute left to go. The median length of stay was 88 days. That was fabulous. That was really fabulous. 75% of clients had a successful discharge. That compared to 43% of substance abuse clients statewide. They're not the same populations, but even so, that is just a home run in terms of outcomes for treatment. When we looked across a variety of domains, we saw improvements after 90 days, 180 days, a similar thing across a wide domain of problems. And then I think this is the final thing. We had 74% of our child exits. The children had permanent placements within 12 months were decided, compared to 49% statewide. And what I emphasize here, this is a statewide figure. That includes substance abuse and involved in those without that sort of capacity. Recall the early data that I said in which the substance-involved families had significantly longer child placements than state average. So, and these are just summary findings, but I think I've made all the points. And sorry for running over and taking up those 2 minutes. Thank you.